On Friday, one of England's most prestigious literary awards, the Whitbread Prize, will be announced in London. As Frank Browning reports, one of the top contenders this year is a 39-year-old vending machine operator.
My name's Gerard Woodward. I'm a novelist and poet and a filler of chocolate machines at Manchester University.
Gerard Woodward is, if nothing, direct. His material is the detail of ordinary life, which, for him, begins, ordinarily, about 7 a.m., listening to the news, feeding the kids, gathering up several pounds of keys to the university's various vending machines.
A bunch of keys.
Hi.
Hi,
Daddy. See ya. Say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In his first published novel, August, he chronicles the quiet, unyielding disintegration of an ordinary family. Summer after summer, they leave their large home in London and drive to Wales, where they set up a tent in a farmer's field.
So you've got this solid house in London and this fragile, flimsy cotton house in Wales. I'm interested in the sort of impermanence of houses. You know, things that we think are solid structures with time become fragile.
One summer, the tent burns and the family takes refuge in the hay barn. It's the first clear sign of the family's unraveling, and it might seem like a cliché, but, says Brian Case, literary editor of Time Out magazine, Woodward charges these stock events with a sometimes blinding luminescence.
Gerard Woodward sees things in the way that you might see them immediately before an epileptic fit or something like that, that suddenly things are illuminated and he writes it down and he makes you see it too. He brings ordinary life into this shimmering, almost like a druggy thing, shimmering explosion. And I don't know how he does that, because he's using very, very ordinary, repetitive ingredients. I would put him in the line of William Blake.
Like Blake, Woodward is known as a poet. Woodward has infused his novel with poetic imagery. On the last of the family's vacations at the Evans farm, Colette, the mother, drifts into a dream reverie about ancient volcanoes consuming the Welsh landscape.
She thinks of Mr. and Mrs. Evans preserved for 2,000 years, hollow spaces beneath a volcanic plain, on whose thin, cindery soil stumpy apple trees might grow. Their cows would become bovine spaces, as if from lost wax. The sheep and hens likewise. One day someone might fill those spaces with molten bronze, chip away the rock, and have a monumental Mr. and Mrs. Evans and their animals fit to grace whatever museums there might be. And then herself and her tent preserved in rock for all time, a triangular space in pumice, and her spread-eagled figure within. I'm returning, she thought, to my stony origins. I'm becoming, once again, a geological feature. A spasm of ordinariness passes through Colette's mind, and she brings her right hand, the hand that is holding the carefully folded wad of pink lavatory paper, to her nose. The oily perfume held in this paper emits a powerful, spirity odour, a venomous scent that stamps through the corridors of her nose and enters, by some secret hatch door, the fragile canopies of her brain.
Colette's hallucination is fed by her steady descent into addiction to glue-sniffing, a respite from the life and the family and the world that is steadily becoming unglued all around her. Critic Brian Case.
Sniffing glue. She's a housewife. How did she get into this? Well, she got into this hovering with her husband's bicycle repair kit, and she opens up the little tube of glue and sniffs it, and shoom, she feels her head begins to move away from all her normal worries. And then you get some scenes in here where her children go to a local bicycle repair shop and they say, we just want stuff for our bikes. And the man says, what do you want? And they say something like, oh, 46 bottles of bicycle repair glue or something. I mean, it becomes ridiculous and embarrassing to them. And their poor mother, she's falling off the chair, the neighbours are talking, her legs give way in supermarkets, and she's the most lovable person, and the whole book is a poem to her.
In fact, the whole of August is woven from Woodward's actual family story. His mother did become addicted to glue. His oldest brother, like Colette's eldest son, was a prodigy pianist at the Royal Academy who became a drunken meter reader. Jared, the youngest of the four children, remembers his brother as a brilliant, if terrifying, drunk.
He would smash up the house and threaten people. And we were constantly having to call the police. And he was constantly being put in the local jail. He was very charming when he was sober, but when he was drunk, he was completely unpredictable. And our lives really, really were structured around knowing when he was going to be drunk and when he was going to be sober. So, and where we should be if he was drunk, you know.
And yet, August is far from memoir. Running through it is a meditation on the relationship between art and memory.
If identity and memory are so closely bound up, what is happening to your identity when you're transferring memory into fiction? You get this curious possibility that you could actually be, your readers are actually absorbing your memories, and they're becoming part of their memories, so that your identity is somehow transferring to your readers, and your readers are becoming you, and you're becoming something else. You know, I partly wrote this book because these memories were very insistent in my mind, and I was sort of hoping that once I'd written it, they would become less insistent and allow me to do other things.
You might suppose that Woodward's writing provides a refuge from the tedium of his job as a candyman at Manchester University, placating the complaints of angry academics.
I'm taking something I don't want, which is tea with sugar. The thing is, there's nothing else, and we're stuck here. So it's not very good, it's bad.
Woodward, who describes his family as inveterate underachievers, likes the work. He started out as a snack bar cashier 2 years ago, after he finished a master's degree in anthropology.
I got bored of the snack bar by then, so I switched to vending machines.
Did you not want to have a proper university job for a proper poet?
This is a proper university job. One of the most important jobs in the university, filling the machines. And people get very very cross if their favourite snack is not available, or they lose money in the machine.
Paid £4.50 an hour, Jared Woodward earns just enough to keep his family and his writing going. Should he win the top Woodward Prize, £20,000, he reckons the University English Department, whose candy machines he fills, might finally take notice of him. For NPR News, I'm Frank Browning in Manchester, England.